Our presentation today is One City Schools by Gail Weissman, which relates to our second principle, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Gail served as a founding board member of One City Schools for 3 years, remained an active supporter, and finally joined the team as a full-time employee in December 2019. Gail now serves as the VP of External Relations, working primarily in the areas of development and business partnerships. Gail had the great pleasure of teaching the Ballet Academy for Scholars last year, who know her as Madam Gigi. So, welcome, Gail.
Thank you, and thank you for the introduction. I appreciate it. When I moved to Madison in 2009, I had grown up in Detroit, and then I lived in New York and Chicago and went to school in Ann Arbor. And I always knew of Madison. I always thought of Madison as this really innovative place where all great like educational reform came out of and wonderful ideas from the University of Wisconsin and so forth. And I think I, along with many people in this area were stunned and shocked and horrified when the Race to Equity report came out, highlighting the disparities in education and the educational and opportunity gaps that exist in Madison. So I know that over the decades, Madisonians have done a lot to try and fix that problem and close that gap and spent millions of dollars, and somehow we've done just it hasn't really moved the needle. So when I met Kaleem Kerr at the Urban League and then followed him through Madison Prep and so forth, and then learned about the idea of One City School, I was immediately excited about it. And I think to start the presentation, I'd like to share a video with you. This is some people who are probably more eloquent than I am talking about One City Schools. So let's see if I can do that. Get that up here. And this is our new website, so I'm still getting used to navigating it. Can you see my screen?
Yes.
Okay.
Can.
This is one of our wonderful preschool teachers, Mr. Sakani. And this is the video I'm going to share. It's just a short one, so here we go.
The vision for One City is we want to grow one vertically integrated program from preschool all the way through 12th grade. We want to be able to demonstrate what happens with children when you start their education as young as 1 year old, to grow them with them all the way up through high school. Being a charter gives us the flexibility to do things differently.
Racial inequities, racial disparities, the achievement gap with African Americans is something that we have to attack. And if we deal with it, we deal with it as a city, and the city flourishes and the city grows. That's where the name One City came from.
I love the name One City. It's really inviting and it's really inclusive. We are all one together. We really need to actually live what we're saying that we want. We're changing the narrative of what it looks like to be a child and a family of color experiencing life and school and education in this community.
You know, you always say it takes a village to raise a child. And I think in One City, I really feel that village. I don't feel like I'm alone. I feel like I have the teachers who are there with me trying to make sure that my child is set up for success.
It is creating pride. It is creating values. It is creating a sense of family. It is where the teachers genuinely believe in the kids, and their success is part and parcel to the child's success.
One City identifies that every child does not learn the same. So it's not like this cookie cutter method of like, this is what we're going to do. Open your books, do this. Exploratory learning, in my opinion, should be an installment in every school.
And Angie Plank is such a huge driver of the philosophy in One City, which is this notion of allowing children the space and the time to explore and to make mistakes on their own and then to process and debrief it afterwards rather than spoon feeding them ahead of time. I think that's really critical to build strong, resilient, competent learners.
As the city changes and as the demographics of our city change, that is going to become our primary employment base. And we need to have people prepared to meet the challenges of future job requirements and skill sets. And that really is the basis of why I'm supporting One City.
One City, it is a nonprofit. And so it always needs funding. We need to stabilize where the school is going to be situated.
We need ambassadors. We need people to become aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
When you invest in One City, you know that those funds are going to those kids. They're going to providing the best teachers that they're able to provide. They're making sure that the classrooms are small. They're making sure that every single student's needs are met. They're making sure that they have ability to participate in a lot of things that maybe they wouldn't participate otherwise, like karate, like ice skating.
If Madison wants to overcome its legacy of disparities, we have to ensure that children are ready to succeed educationally in the marketplace of job opportunities or entrepreneurship in our city. And we need a model that shows the community what we can do. We have created this school called One City, which is designed to bring our whole community together. We're trying to show people that we can accomplish greater things for our children.
Okay, so that's that was hearing from some of our supporters and some of our parents. I love that video, and the faces of the children, of course, are beautiful. The school was actually designed. Let's go to this page. The school was actually designed with a tremendous amount. I was just blown away by the amount of research and the number of experts that were consulted around the world to look at what really has moved the needle in other communities and what really does work at helping to close the gap. So this wasn't just a, you know, kind of quickly thrown together thing by a group of people. There was a tremendous amount of community roundtables and research in the community. So a team of people really pulled together the best practices from other communities and then did research in Madison to see what specifically would really work well. And one of the big pieces is the two-generation community approach. So our school has done a tremendous job. We have a vice president of family, guess one of our dads, vice president of family engagement that works just on engagement with families and making sure that they're involved in the school and making sure that they have everything they need and that we know what they can do to help the school. We take great pride in the fact that at any given event, we have over 70% of participation. So if we call a meeting, there's a family meeting about anything, we send out a survey, our families respond. And we have, and I believe we're one of the only schools in Dane County that can say this, we have 100% participation in our parent-teacher conferences every time, all year. And we do three a year, not just two, we do three. It's really, that's something we're very proud of. We also work with partners such as the Urban League and other agencies to help families secure employment or go through a job training program. We do fundraising for scholarships for our preschool, but those scholarships are never 100%. There is always skin in the game for our families. They have to be contributing too, because we know from research that that's where the real sense of involvement comes from. And it just works, and it's working really well for us. Some of the unique features of the school, and these are the expensive features because we are a nonprofit, but we have a longer school day. And that's important because the children are here for a long part of the day. But one of the things that we do during that day is we have academies. And that's what I got to do the Ballet Academy. I swear, the most fun I have had in my adult life. I haven't had such a blast teaching kids ballet. There was a big pushback from some of the boys. And I showed them pictures of kids from Alvin Ailey jumping and asked if they could jump that high. And they all said yes. And then they tried and they couldn't. And they said, how do they do that? And I said, they got ballet legs. So they were all in after that. So we had a blast doing that. But they've done academies for martial arts, ice skating, soccer. There's a huge list. They do art, they do choir, singing, mindfulness, yoga. And these are all activities that probably 90% of our children, according to our parents, would not have access to. But they're not extracurricular. They're just built into the day. They're part of the day at One City. And so that longer day isn't just, after school care for a couple hours. It's a programming all day long. And then we also have an extended school year, which we know has made a difference for our kids. They don't have that summer slide. All of this is weird to talk about during COVID because we're a little skewed now because of that. But we had some very good early, I want to share this with you. We did have some good early, very promising statistics on our how our program is working so far. So our extended days, our extended year, we do Anji play at the preschool. We're the only preschool in Wisconsin and one of the few in the United States to do that. It's a program from China. I could do a whole presentation just on that and I won't, but it's an amazing program. And then our elementary school, we use expeditionary learning. So it's very hands-on. What are the kids interested in? And then build from there. It's a tremendous program. And the demographics, this is our, these are the, you know, some of the, this is just heartbreaking to look at these statistics, but they're there. And this is our reading proficiency score. I won't go over everything, but I'll just show you this one. So this is MMSD, third grade. And then this is third through fifth. And then this is One City. So this is from the fall of 2019. And we use the MAP benchmark data for this. But you can see that in the minimal category for reading proficiency, our kids are in 14% as opposed to Black African-American students attending MMSD are much higher. Basic, our kids are in 56%, again, higher than MMSD. And then proficient or advanced, again, 31% as opposed to 16%. And when we talk about this, I would like to say I have grandchildren who went through the school system in MMSD, and we had some wonderful teachers, and there have been, again, some tremendous programs trying to fix this, but they just haven't worked. And the beauty of a charter school, the true purpose of a charter school is to be an incubator for innovation, to come up with new ideas, to figure out we can pivot, we can move fast, we can change things like that. We're a small school, so we have the ability to do that. And that's why charter schools in general, I think, are, if it's the right charter school and they're done with that true purpose, they're really important. And there is a section on our website that I won't go into now, why charters work, that has some very powerful stories about the impact that charter schools can have on their community and beyond. We also have a partnership with the University of Wisconsin Research Program. They are doing a longitudinal study of One City. So they're following our children from preschool through high school because One City is growing. We've been growing a grade a year. We had our original charter from the Office of Education through UW in 2017, and we've added a grade a year since then. We started with just 4K, but we will be adding, we'll be growing a little bit faster now because I think we've seen the need. So we're looking at doing that. And they come in and they scrutinize us. They look at every aspect of what we're doing so that they can then share those best practices out so that other systems can adopt them, hopefully in the future. We also have up here, you can see that we have our, this is our for parents section. Oh, I looked at that one already. I want to do One City Life. And this is where we talk about our FAST program. I don't know if any of you are familiar with that, if you've been in education, but Dr. Lynn McDonald from the University of Wisconsin started this program, and it is now, it's around the world. They do it in other countries. It's families and schools together. And this is what really sets the tone for our school and for our families being engaged It's a tremendous program. It's an 8-week program. Families meet one night a week. We did it virtually for the first time this year, but it was still very successful. And our families really learned that they have to be part of their children's education. That's the big takeaway. And then we learned something about our families. The other thing that makes us really unique, and I know that there are some wonderful, volunteers at all organizations, but they do not hold a candle to ours. We have the most tremendous group of volunteers. We have about 60 that are really involved. This is Catherine Zadeblik. She's one of our big volunteers and now a board member. And Alice Erickson is our volunteer coordinator. And she's a volunteer coordinator. So she works basically full time, but is in a volunteer capacity and really connects everybody. And does an amazing job. Our volunteers did not miss a beat when we closed, when the school had to close for due to the pandemic. We went to a virtual tutoring program. So people who were used to coming in and had relationships with some of the kids went through a training and started doing a virtual tutoring program over the summer. And now that's continuing on throughout the school year. They also just recently had a group of volunteers trained by our VP of Engagement, Marilyn Ruffin, and our tremendous school social worker, Letitia White. They did an awesome training so that our volunteers could conduct virtual tours. Every single family had a virtual tour set up so that we could learn more about the children and their families, our scholars and their families, and we could also learn what they needed from us and what they had to contribute. Every family has something to contribute. So it goes both ways. And we really do all truly work together. One of our parents, just as an example, as it turns out, is an infectious disease expert at the university. And she was instrumental in pulling together a team of our school health team, our nurse, our nursing assistant. Our medical advisor is Dr. Dipesh Nefsaria. He's fantastic. He's the head of pediatrics for the University of Wisconsin Hospitals. And then pulling in everything that was, you know, there was just so much coming at us about we should open, we shouldn't open, this is safe, this isn't safe. And we did had parent meetings, many of them over the summer, and all worked together to come up with a list of protocols that we all felt made sense for our school. And then we were able to quickly move into this amazing building here at Coyer. It's an office building, and I never would have thought of us as a school in here, but it's huge. So we have the whole first floor and we can be socially distant. So each classroom is in its own little cohort with its own teacher and assistant teacher. And the kids eat lunch in the classroom. They're not mingling as much, but there are 2 acres of trails around the school. So the kids are outside all the time. In fact, this summer, because the bike crew can't happen anymore with these cold months, we have snowshoes and the kids are going to learn how to snowshoe. So it's just, this is like a little island of joy. I just can't. It's really amazing. We also worked with the university again, their research department, and we were a pilot program for them in a COVID surveillance testing that they came up with. And it's a spit test. So I don't have one here, but it's just a little tube that all of staff and all of the scholars consented to participate in this pilot, and we were tested twice a week. And this tells you if your viral load is high enough that you need to go in for a COVID test. So it's just another protocol and now we've brought that in-house. We have we discovered that our nursing assistant has a background in microbiology, and one of the women that works in external relations with us is a CNA. So they were trained by this team that came over from UW, and now we've brought that in-house. And next week, we will begin our own testing program. And it's mandatory. Every staff person and every scholar will be tested twice a week now. So it's hard in 20 minutes to tell you all of the new and innovative things we're doing, but that's a good glimpse into it. I think I pretty much went through the whole website. If you are interested in looking at it more, our board meetings are posted. Those are open meetings, And you're welcome to join. Anyone is welcome to join anytime to learn what we're doing, ask us questions. And all of our agendas and minutes are posted on this as well. And then again, I would encourage you to just look at why charters work. I think that there's been a common misconception and misinformation about charters and how they work and what they're supposed to do. And I think it's I think this school is really proving that when they're run properly and they are true to the intention of a charter school, they really can make a difference.
Wow. Thank you, Gail. We have quite a bit of time left for discussion. So if there's some aspect, Gail, of the program that you feel you didn't have time to focus on, you can take a few more minutes for that. And then we'll close discussion at 10:55.
Okay, thank you. I think that one of the really foundational ideas behind One City is our Anji Play program. And Anji Play was actually developed in China and has had great success there. We actually sent teachers to China to learn the program. So it's a very different program. In fact, it's uncomfortable for a lot of people, and it's not something that can just be adopted without a tremendous amount of education around the program itself, because it really is a different approach where children are encouraged to take risk. It is a risk-based program. They take risk, they learn persistence, and sometimes it's hard as somebody, even for myself personally, not being trained, when I'm at the preschool and I'm outside and I'm watching the kids do barrel rolling and things like that. I'm a grandmother. My gut is like, oh, honey, is that safe? But it is really something. And actually, I think my colleague Zina Zupan. Zina, are you on?
Yeah.
Zina was a teacher at the preschool a couple of years ago and then came back. Once you get sucked into One City, you never leave. I was a founding board member and now I work here. Zina was a teacher and now she's our CEO's executive assistant. So Zina, do you have anything more to add about Anji Play, since I know you were actually at the preschool teaching it?
Yeah, just really quick. Hi, I'm Zina. I was Zina Anderson, so I recognize a lot of you. I'm KK's granddaughter. I saw on Gail's calendar that she was going to be talking to you guys, and I was like, oh my gosh, that's Prairie and Madison. I should probably join you. I was a kindergarten teacher 2 years ago, and so I was at the school watching the kids build structures with ladders and planks, and we have these barrels that they roll on, and it's wild. A big part of Anji Play is letting the kids just build and work together and not really intervene unless someone's about to get hurt. And then usually classes spend about an hour at a time outside, and then they come back inside and they do what are called play stories. So they draw what they did outside. They might think of a problem that they had or something they did that was really successful with their friends, and they would draw a picture of it. Even our two-year-olds do this. They draw it and then they explain it to their teacher if they're not writing yet, and we write the story. And then those get posted on the wall, so the kids the next day go out and try to build on what they were doing the previous day and try to problem solve with their friends. And they build on these play stories every day. So it's really cool.
They do teamwork. I mean, they really do learn how to work together. And then that feeds beautifully into the expeditionary learning program at the elementary school. So just as an example there, our director of school culture, Julie Traxler, said, we've got all this space outside and all these trees, and some of them, look like they're dying. And she worked with the city of Madison. They came and while the kids watched, cut down the trees and created this outdoor classroom. So the kids have tree stumps to sit on. And then they took logs and did like this, cut out where the logs would fit into the two stumps at the end. And they have these bridges that they can walk across, and turned it into this amazing outdoor area. And the kids started asking what maple syrup, did it come from trees? Because there were some maple trees. So they're going to actually try and tap the trees, probably won't work, but they're going to learn how to do it. So, but all of those things flow from, you know, that original idea. Risk-taking and exploring are huge components of the curriculum here.
Wow. Thank you very much. And I'm sure we have lots of questions and interested people. So we can start our discussion now.
The charter school is a public charter school, so it's open to all, and we have a lottery, just as any school would. So the children that start with us are obviously, once they're in, they can move up grades. And as we originally planned to add a grade a year, however, we are speeding that up because we see that there's a stronger need to get it ramped up more quickly. So we've applied to do our middle school and high school much sooner than we expected. Those concerns are exactly the same ones that we had. And we know that we need to expand more rapidly. There is a strong, and the preschool is tuition based. So that's, again, it's open to everyone. It is tuition based, and we do have some scholarships, but there are no scholarships that are 100%. Every parent contributes something. And right now we have, I think it's 145 students are in person and 36 virtual at the elementary school. We had to keep our classroom size to 15 to follow the protocols for the pandemic. And so after all of our summer planning, we had all of the parents say, do you want your child in person or virtual? And then once they made that decision to be virtual, they could not go back and change their mind in the middle of the year because of the protocols that were put in place. And because of that strong need to have these cohorts to keep everyone safe. So, but they were able to, we were able to fit a couple more kids in this quarter. So, it will be nice when we can open up to everyone again. But some of our children really do need to be virtual for different reasons, health reasons and things like that. And then the preschool is almost all in person. I think that the way One City is set up is actually perfect. It is done through the Office of Education at University of Wisconsin, and we have rigorous reporting requirements, and we are scrutinized by that office on a regular basis. The chartering officer attends all of our board meetings, for example. They know what's going on. They know what the school is doing. And I think having that research, that eye on us, also with the research team from UW doing the longitudinal study, is also huge. So everything we do is transparent, open. It's accessible to everyone. Everyone knows about it. And to share those results. You know, what is the purpose? What is the intent? A charter school needs to apply and needs to have a set of criteria and a problem that they are looking at. So I think when they are set up that way, that's what they were really designed to do. So not to take over or take away from an existing school system, but really to partner with that school system. We have a partnership with MMSD, and we talk to the superintendent has toured our schools, and Jen Cheatham did when she was here. So they know what's happening at One City, and they are looking at what's working.
Cool.
It takes a really long time to change those systems sometimes, but we'll get there. Yes, and actually, when the charter was first established, these longer days and longer school extended school year are actually part of our charter. So we have no wiggle room to try anything different with those, and nor would we want to, because we are seeing tremendous results. And the fact that, I mean, and there are vacation days interspersed, you know, throughout the year, and there is a spring break and there is a summer break. It's just not the whole summer. So there are days off for the staff and the scholars as well. But we according to the research that we did and the schools we looked at that were in communities where there were huge gaps existing, opportunity and education gaps, that seemed to be a big feature of what helped move that needle. And that's why we included that in our school design. But I think for the public schools, you know, looking at how that's working and then maybe tweaking it in such a way that it would work in the school system is a great idea. And I think that's exactly the kind of data they need to be looking at, and then figuring out what parts of this can we do realistically and how fast can we do it. There is a cost right now. We fundraise to cover the expense of those longer days and that longer school year, because we don't get government funding for that. And it's extremely expensive. So that's part of some of the advocacy work that we're going to be moving into a little bit more too, moving forward, is to help charter schools that are doing things like this. So we have our vice president of family engagement handles enrollment, and I know that we do have a waiting list. We've had a waiting list almost since the day we opened for the preschool, and there are still children on that waiting list, and for the elementary school as well. Right now, we did have two seats open for in-person in the elementary school, and we held a lottery. So there are two children that have just started back with us this winter. But we only had two spaces available because of the COVID restrictions. We had the class sizes are even smaller than they normally would be. And there is also a limit on the number of students we can do virtually, that we can accommodate virtually. So that this question that you're asking is one of the big motivators, though, for us in expanding more rapidly than we were originally planning to. You know, that is a really wonderful and extremely difficult question, and something that we already are grappling with and will continue to, because the school is a public school open to anyone, any family. We have the lottery. We are, because of our location on the south side, our demographics are predominantly the community that we were originally looking to serve. But we also know that many times when programs are successful, they become more appealing. And we have a number of families that we have many families in Madison now that are also aware, are white families that want their children to be raised in a diverse environment, in a good diverse, where everyone is included and everything is celebrated, and there's a true education, and there there's a social consciousness component like there is at One City. So it's important to have as much of everybody here as we can get. And right now we're very fortunate that we have a great mix. But for now, the majority of our students do come from that original demographic that we were looking at. Along the lines of that, what we were just talking about, that is a real possibility. And we've seen that at other schools. My grandson goes to Wright School, and I was talking to one of the counselors there, and she said, you know, when we started the AVID program, it was really designed for that same demographic that we're talking about. And it became so popular that within a few years, we saw more white students in it than students of color. So that is something that's a thing that happens, you know, so we do look at that. But it is a public school, and it is a lottery system. However, once children are in, they're in. So the kids that are with us are our lead class right now, our first class of preschoolers, 4K, that have moved all the way up to second grade. Most of those students are still with us. And they are sort of like, you know, they lead the school. Those second graders are pretty proud of themselves. And they will continue to move all the way up through high school now with us as well. And I'm sorry, what was the first question about? Oh, the longer days. Our parents generally love it. They love those days. And the big reason for that is the academies, you know, because they have those. So it's not an extra curricular. There's no extra charge. And the kids love, and they love it. I mean, they're being exposed to things oftentimes that there just wouldn't be time or money for outside of school. So I think because those longer days don't involve, you know, just like a sort of a daycare at the end of the day. And I'm not saying that's not a good thing for families too sometimes, but in this case, that's just not the reality. It's a curriculum all the way built in through the whole day, and lots of recess and outside time as well. Sorry. We do have that. We have been using the MAP testing because that's right now that was the only tool available to us. But that is a conversation that the school and the chartering organization body at the Office of Education at UW, our representative from them, and the the research team have all talked about, particularly in light of the fact that we were virtual for so much of the year last year. How do we really test this, and how do we really see what's working and what's not working? So we're still in early stages of this. And so far, the only hard data we have is using the MAP testing. But we are looking for other ways, and the research team is looking for other ways too. They do come in and observe. Well, they're not now, but they were coming in and observing classrooms and talking to parents. They interview parents, they interview staff, they interview the teachers to see how things are going, and they watch the children in action. And that's has been part of it up until last March. Now we're looking at other ways to get them back in, and to look at are there some ways that we can, you know, use those tests for that we need for the Office of Education and for the research team to, you know, and to figure out what the best method of that is.
I know we're all heartened by the good news of how well this school is doing. And thank you very much, Gail, for your presentation.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us. I really appreciate it.